There is an endless sea of podcasts about entrepreneurship. Talking about it, but not living it. We live it every day. This is Inside the Wolf's Den, an entrepreneurial journey with Sean and Joni Wolfswinkel, talking about real estate investing, but also encompassing general subjects in regards to owning small to medium-sized businesses, and of course, all the struggles that business owners must overcome to be successful. This is Inside the Wolf's Den, and this is Sean and Joni Wolfswinkel.
Welcome back to Inside the Wolf's Den with your hosts, Sean and Joni Wolfswinkel. Today we have a very special guest with us, our good friend, Corey Boatwright. Corey is a serial entrepreneur and founder of Real Estate Investing Profit and Phenomenal Results Coaching. Between himself, his teams, and his students all over the world, he's bought and sold over $100 million in real estate by completing over 1,000 real estate transactions. Thank you so much, Corey, for being here with us today. I'm excited to hear your story, for our listeners to hear your story. So thank you.
Awesome. Thanks for having me. I appreciate you guys.
Yeah. So we just, we were just discussing before we started this. I would love to hear more of your background. I know you're a stud and a rock star today, but I want to know how you got there.
And
you know?
Master negotiator, it sounds like.
I mean, you were, dealing on the playground and
so how did it all start? Yeah. I mean, your entrepreneurial journey, I think every person I know that is an entrepreneur, they have this kind of roller coaster journey. And I was right along there. I mean, I had a lot of different failures and I didn't really look at them like failures. In fact, there is a book that most people have read. I'm sure you have read it as well. It's called Rich Dad, Poor Dad by Robert Kiyosaki. Yeah. And he said something in there that was very interesting. He said 9 out of 10 businesses fail. And I got really excited about that because I knew I just needed to start 10 businesses and one of them was going to succeed. You know, and so my outlook in life always was a little different perspective than most. Mm-hmm. And I always thought someone else could be as smarter than me, but no one is going to outwork me. You know, cause I remember working, selling Kirby home cleaning systems.
Wow.
When I was in my teens and I got awarded the number one salesperson in Oklahoma for the youngest and the most sales in a day.
Okay.
And I remember going through that process of selling Kirby's, and I had an amazing coach. His name was Vince Gonzalez, and he was so disciplined on basically having me every single morning listen to Dale Carnegie, wow, listen to Brian Tracy, listen to Tony Robbins, you know, listen to all of these folks that are kind of older now, but like were foundational for sales and for marketing and for business and for understanding. And even at a young age, I was listening to those things. And I remember applying some of those little things that I could, you know, in my journey. Mm-hmm. And I remember that there's this new guy that came on, real slick, smart guy, way older than me. I was in my teens. Mm. And I knew that he was just going to crush and everyone thought he was just going to be amazing. And I remember thinking to myself, you know, that guy's really smart, but he has to stop and eat. I don't. He's going to sleep. I don't. And I just remember having that advantage of what I looked at as I will outwork someone, but you may be smarter than me, but you're not going to outwork me. And I just remember the consistency factor was one of the things that as an entrepreneur, I knew was, you know, really important.
Yeah.
And that's probably why I looked at life that way of 9 out of 10 businesses fail. I knew I had to start 10 businesses. One of them's going to succeed. I knew I just had to get through the 9 failures. And I didn't look at failure the same way. Mm-hmm. I never have. I always looked at either you win or learn. It's not win or lose.
Right.
And I think that is a foundational piece for every entrepreneur to hold on to, because you will have these massive ups and downs. in life, and you've got to figure out a way to cope with them, man.
Yeah.
So where did that start, though? Where did you get like that kind of drive?
And my mom is a rock star. My mom worked 12-hour shifts at a company called 3M. Mm-hmm. And I remember when my dad passed away when I was very young, 18 months old. Wow. He was a pilot. He was a crop duster. We had several airplanes. We had a crop dusting business. My mom would say he would leave it before the sun came up, and he would come home when the sun was down. And I remember back then, Sean, that was like a code of, that was like a badge of honor. Now on today, we've learned to work smarter, not harder, right? But back then in the industrial age, when our grandmas and grandma, you know, when they were, you know, my grandma and grandpa grew up in a teepee with 9 kids, right? 9 kids in a teepee in Oklahoma. And so there was a sense of grit, you know, that was like different than what it is today. Yeah. And I miss some of that. I really do. Cause I think sometimes we get a little bit lazy, and in technology can be a great thing, but also can kind of make us lazy. And so I think that grit part is, you know, important. My mom, coming from that kind of industrial revolution, and my dad passing away, my mom had to fend for herself. So I had 2 older brothers. I'm the youngest. And we were just a handful. I can't tell. I mean, my best friends growing up went to boys' homes and went to prison.
Wow.
My best friends. Wow. Because I grew up in a small town. This is an excuse. This is a perspective. I grew up in a small town, and all you did is get in fights, you know, break in just to get in trouble, you know, just do rambunctious stuff. And I hung out with thugs. Now, you know, I say they're my friends, but I realized later on in life that a real friend isn't going to do some of those things.
Yeah.
A real friend is going to be caring more about your well-being and how you're doing and help being a healthy person than it is just being a part of the crew. And so my mom, to get back to your question, my mom worked these 12-hour shifts, and she had to put food on the table. I didn't come from a silver spoon in my mouth, brother. I did not. And you know, I knew that anything was going to happen, it was going to be up to me. In fact, when I sold Kirby Home Cleaning Systems, one of the things we used to say every single morning, yelling it out loud, affirming it, yelling out loud, if it's going to be, it's up to me. If it's going to be, it's up to me. And I realized later on in life that that's actually something that will hold you back if you build a business. But, you know, when you're solo and you're just kind of you're going on your way, you know, you learn all these things. And my mom worked these 12-hour shifts. She worked 10 years, guys, 10 years without a single day off.
Wow.
And she had a kidney stone.
Wow. She's a rock star, right?
My mom, the rock star, she worked as a Mary Kay woman for the Mary Kay back then, was a big deal for like sales, for makeup. And she got the car.
Pink
she
car,
got the
huh?
Car. Yeah. She also
is she still alive today?
Yeah, she is. Awesome. So I spend, you know, every Sunday with her. And that's got a whole story behind it too. I didn't used to do that, but you know, with your perspectives, me going through cancer and stuff, that changed my whole perspective on what's really important in life.
Yeah.
But just to answer your question, I think my grit came from, that was a long answer, but that I think it's important to understand the journey. I think that grit came from my mom and my dad. My dad, even though he wasn't around. I mean, obviously he went to work early in the morning, came home at night. So he loved what he did. And I think that's one of the big challenges with entrepreneurs as well, is that you love building and create. I think the heart of an entrepreneur is a creator. And you love creating. It's so cool to create something out of thin air. It's so cool to be able to create your own business name and your logo. And it's so cool to see people come on when you start building a business and, you know, in these different departments. And you're just, it's so cool to kind of be like a creator of this. And where do we want to go? And creating the roadmap. That's so cool to do, right? As a creator. And I think that, you know, as an entrepreneur, you've got to be able to grasp that. And my dad, you know, I mean, he had a crop dusting business. He was a hard worker. My mom knew that she had to take care of us. So I think that's where a big part of the grit came from.
I got 2 questions that came out of that, this maybe I'm for me personally, though, and I'm going to fast forward your story probably by a lot, but that grit and that hard work and all that, I know a little bit about you. I know you're a much more balanced person today. Correct me if I'm totally wrong, but you know, and like maybe, you know, the Sundays with your mom now and the, your family and, you know, your wife, and I know you take time off. So where that outworking everybody in the room, where did that switch? When did, and what caused you to maybe look at life a little differently? Was it that you hit a certain milestone in income and wealth, or does it, what changed, you know? And can you have both, I guess?
I definitely believe you can have both. I've seen it. I think there's no such thing as balance. I think it's a fallacy. I think you need to replace the word balance with integration. Mm-hmm. If you actually, you know, look scientifically, that the world's still turning all the time. So there's nothing actually ever completely balanced. Mm-hmm. So you're just constantly back and forth, a little bit here, a little bit there. For me, it was a couple of different things. I was working really hard, man, and blowing up this short sale business. Mm-hmm. You know, the 30-second version of my real estate is I learned how to bird dog from a guy that was crushing it. And I figured out what he was doing. He was selling properties and wholesaling them. So I said, okay, I want to learn that. So I learned that. Before all of that, I got on eBay for one full year and just bought every single book and course and every single CD and DVD and even tapes and everything I could on learning real estate. And I literally didn't know anything about it. I thought you had to go to be like some, you know, initial behind your name to do it. I thought it was actually illegal to do it if you didn't do that. Like, I didn't know. I just did not know. And so I just completely, you know, went through and learned all these courses and stuff. And I finally got enough confidence. Like, all right, I think I want to do this. I became a bird dog, and then I became a wholesaler. And then I started a rehab company, and I had a general contractor pull a gun on me. And, you know, that oh changed my gosh. Whole perspective on, being in that business.
Yeah.
And then I, basically stumbled upon my first short sale back in the early 2000s.
Okay.
First part 2000, and it changed my whole life. It changed everything. It's like the sun, it's like the clouds parted and the sun shined down on that story. And once I realized how to short sale, and banks were actually willing to take these big, huge discounts back then, I just turned everything off and focused on short sales and got pretty big in that business. I eventually, you know, people started taking me for lunch because nobody's really doing them back in the early 2000s. Mm-hmm. And I was online, this thing called Easy HUD, where I was answering I answered over 1,200 posts. And the only reason I knew that is because the owner of Easy HUD, his name was Chris Daigle, pretty big guy now, big successful guy. He, him and Chris Chico were partners back then. Okay. But basically, he had this forum called Easy HUD, instead of Facebook back then, it's forums. And basically I was answering every question about short sales. And he contacts me and he's like, do you realize you've answered like 1,200 posts on, you know, Easy HUD on short sales? Like, do you want to become a moderator? I was like, well, yeah, that sounds great. And then I became a moderator. And then he was like, you should just create a course. Yeah. I was like, a course? I was a reluctant information marketer. I really was in the beginning. And because I didn't want to do it. And I was like, I kind of looked at it like a used car salesman or something. And even though I read a bunch of them and I learned a bunch of stuff, I just kind of didn't really like, oh, that was them. That's not me. And then I said, all right, I'm going to make a course. So I sweat blood and tears. If I showed you, I mean, I had two huge binders, huge, like this big and this big, everything I've ever learned about short sales, all my experiences, everything, blood, sweat, and tears. I remember falling asleep, you know, writing this one. I mean, just months of blood, sweat, and tears in my short sale course. And got it out there, and we did a webinar, one of the first ones that I really even knew of back then. We sold over $50,000 in an hour and a half on a webinar.
Wow.
And that changed my whole perspective on everything. And I was building this business, and I started to have more people say, hey, can I take you to lunch? And then the lunch went to Shoney's, and then Shoney's got bigger, and we did a little event. And I started, you know, being the information marketer and kind of the Oklahoma short sale guru. And then I became more of a national guru. People started asking me to sell on their stages. So I started going to sell it. And then I said, you know what? The short sale process sucks. It takes so much time. I'm the type of person that wants to make a better mousetrap. You know, I want to be able, I know what I need to do. I need to just figure it out. And so we created a technology called Short Cell Builder. And that was a software that basically took a 20-hour short sale process down to about 15, 20 minutes because we worked with the APIs for the major fax machines for these, you know, mortgage companies like Countrywide and all these other ones. And that blew up. We got almost 5,000 users paying $97 a month, which was a big deal, big business. So I'm getting to the answer to your question. The reason I'm bringing that up is because I was building this business, Sean, and you know, I'm building this business up, and what's happening is I'm working and I'm selling and I'm thinking, this is it. This is what I need to do. And I'm newly married and I'm on the road. And here's what's interesting about success. The more successful you are, the more people want you to come to their stages and do things like that. The more successful that you are, the more traveling and things like that people want you to do, at least back and then, that's how my perspective was. People were asking me to come to their stage, come to their thing, come do this, right? And so I'm making all this money, but I'm traveling and I'm leaving my wife out there on a newly married, newly married. And so she put up with it for about 2 years. And I come home one time and I noticed something's wrong, and lo and behold, we found out that there was an affair going on, and that rocked my world. On top of that, the church I was going to, because God's been such a huge part of my life, but the church I was going to, the pastor and the music minister got caught in affairs. And the funny thing about that is the pastor of that church I've been going to for over 4 or 5 years. I went to all these men group on Friday, Sean, where you like men get together and they're like, you know, I looked at porn. I lusted, whatever. I suck as a man. I need to be a better leader. And you talk about these things and, you know, you get it out. But for 3 to 5 years, I was a part of that. The pastor gave me pastoral counseling during the time that I was, you know, dealing with all this stuff before the affair happened. And then he got caught with that. So I got a divorce. I lost my church. The church ended up splitting. And then on top of that, my business partner and I get into a huge riff. And he basically, you know, anyway, we split. And so I basically had a big divorce in my business. And so to answer your question, what I realized was that I needed to build a business and I needed to I needed to build something with processes and systems and not be this one man show out there, this gunslinger that was just basically all the weight was on me in order to perform. So I needed to create a team.
Wow. And that was later, right? I mean, how long ago was that?
Yeah. So that was in 2011.
Okay.
Yep. 2011, right around there.
Yeah. And tell us what does your business look like today?
Thank you for sharing that and getting vulnerable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We try to share like what, you know, everybody sees the end result on so much, so especially with social media these days. And so, you know, we were on Jim Zaspel was on our podcast a couple of days ago, and we were talking a lot about this because, you know, he's always on his driving in his car doing his thing. And I think you were even doing that for a while, but, and I'm not a social media, you joke around it. You see Joni a lot, but you don't see me. But, you know, but you see the end result. You see the end product, and you don't see all the struggles
and failures and everything that in between. Right. Absolutely.
Yeah. Right. But, what does it look like today, your company?
Yeah. So today we have a local wholesaling business called House Kings that we do around 100 deals a year on mostly wholesaling. We do some buy and holds, very few though. And then we have a national, as of last year in November, we started a national division for wholesaling. So we're wholesaling stuff all around the country and doing deals in New York and Alabama and Texas and all these different places. which is really cool, but it also has its set of challenges.
Yeah.
And then I have my multifamily business, which again, just in the sphere of real estate, where I'll be right at 600 units as a GP.
Wow.
Not a big part, but a pretty decent part GP with my partner, Corey Peterson and Sean Terry. And so we have our multifamily business as well, which is called Investing Capital Group.
Yeah, I didn't realize you had got to that many units already. That's awesome. Congratulations. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's taken a little bit of time, you know, short and considered some others I've talked to, but I started that in about 2015, 16. I really started to kind of put more emphasis on multifamily, and I knew that wholesaling wasn't going to be the end all be all. You know, it's kind of like a means to an end. You get some big money in, but I want to put it over into something that's going to last and have big, you know, legacy wealth, if you will.
Yeah.
And with your experience and being as long as you've been in real estate, where do you see the market heading? I know I'm putting you on the spot, but I know you don't have a crystal ball.
You don't have a crystal ball here.
But where do you see, I'm curious just to know.
Yeah.
Where do you
see things? I like to be put on the spot. That's fine. So I believe that we're not being told the full picture. You know, housing's blowing up right now. You know, they're saying the inventory shortage is a reason why no one's building because of COVID. Mm-hmm. No one moved because of COVID. So now, you know, now people want to build, and now the lumber's going skyrocket because, you know, now everybody wants to build all one time because you can actually do it now. You can get stuff moved through. But what people don't realize is, I don't think most people realize, is that for 2 years almost, people haven't made a house payment.
Yeah.
For almost 2 years, thousands and tens of thousands of people haven't made a house payment. And setting up those habits, I don't care if you can afford it, setting up those habits for 2 years is going to be incredibly hard to break whenever it's time that you have to start making them. And so I think you're going to have a lot bigger amount of these foreclosures and opportunities the banks are going to have with these properties that people are not going to be able to make that payment now. Maybe they went out and bought a new car now and, you know, they thought, you know, I'll make that another payment in a year and I'll have it worked out by then. And they don't. And I think that, you know, so there's going to be an opportunity there for banks to be able to have these REOs. I think REOs is going to be a very big deal. I also think that's pretty cool that now's the time, especially with I'm not going to get into politics, but with old good old Biden, you know, basically putting the crosshairs on real estate investors and kind of the wealthy, it's going to be a time to kind of hold some stuff and not necessarily sell things, but I want to do it in a way that I like sub two. I like taking properties subject to, but I want to do it by pretty houses. I don't want to do it on things that need a lot of work and stuff like that. So I'm looking at deals right now where, you know, normally you'd be looking at a different data set for marketing, but we're looking at marketing now for these sub two deals that are 2005, 2010 homes, right? And above. That beautiful homes, pretty homes that have great rates on them that we can just come and take subject to. And one of our you know, goals on that is to do 50 of those over the next 5 years.
Wow. I mean, that's something Joni and I talked about for a while. We, because our story is we door knocked, you know, pre foreclosures for over 10 years.
And so we've
you know, we did majority of our stuff was subject to then. And we did a lot of pretty houses at that time. And I still own some in my rental portfolio that are like that. But I think that's going to be a huge opportunity. In the next wave. But I don't know when that's going to happen. But where the rates are right now, I mean, just think about that. We were like, back then I was taking over subject to and, like, it was unheard to see like a 6% or something.
Oh, yeah.
And now I can do like 2.7.
Yeah.
That'd be awesome. So, cool.
Well, if someone is thinking about getting started as an entrepreneur, Corey, what advice would you give them?
Well, Elon Musk said that when you're going to start a business, imagine getting a bunch of glass in your mouth and just start chewing on it.
Ouch.
And then he also said that, what motivation would you give someone to start a business? He said, if you need motivation, I'd say, don't start one.
Sweet.
So, yeah. I'm a fan of some of his stuff, not everything, but I think the advice is,
you know, that was pretty hardcore. That was like, you're speaking truth.
It's freaking truth, right? Yeah. I think you've got to realize that you're going to have to get very, very comfortable with falling down mm-hmm. and quote failing as a part of your process yeah. of succeeding. I think if you're the type of person that gets offended by you not getting something right the first time mm-hmm. and, you know, you didn't get it right or you messed up or whatever and that, and you basically back off too easy, that probably being an entrepreneur is not the right yeah. move for you. I used to think mm-hmm. that everybody should be an entrepreneur. Why, mm-hmm. why not? You can take your own, you can set your own hours. You mm-hmm. can go do all your thing. You know, no one tells you when to stop working and start working and when to take lunch. Why wouldn't everybody want that life? Thank God that's not the way I think now. Thank God not everybody's an entrepreneur, and that's perfectly okay
yeah.
because what it takes to be an entrepreneur when you don't have the floor, right? But you don't have the ceiling, but you don't have the floor. Mm-hmm. You have to get comfortable with floating.
Yeah.
And you have to get comfortable with, you know, basically not having all the answers, having maybe 30% of the answers and be able to make a decision. Mm-hmm. You have to get really comfortable, you know, with the idea of, you're going to create something out of thin air.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just think that drive. So the other thing we talk about, yeah. you know, if you don't have drive, Joni, I don't know if it's the right move for mm-hmm. you to be an entrepreneur.
Mm-hmm.
So true.
I mean, we were talking about this before we got on and started recording, but the drive is, when you said that, I was trying to think about that because I was, mm-hmm. I was, you know, replaying because we coach people for many years in the pre-foreclosure space. We, you know, we help out a lot of our staff and people, and I'm like, what the people that make it and the people that don't. And we always had that 80-20 rule, like mm-hmm. 80% would never make it. They're the people we coach. And those are awful statistics because you look like you're an awful coach, but it was the drive. And if you really look at Joni and I, and she hates that I say that, I'll talk about myself.
No, I have smart people working for me. And that's what you love. That's what you want.
I'll just talk about myself. I'm not the smartest one in the room.
But we have drive.
But we have extreme drive. Like we just, yeah. you know, we're just, constantly.
Maybe, Corey, you've kind of experienced from your upbringing, you know, and you kind of saw that with your mom, which is same thing with me. I saw my mom work her butt off just to support my brother and I, you know. And so, you know, I think in today's world, I don't know if a lot of people have that because they haven't experienced some of that. So.
Yeah. The struggle. Mm-hmm. But I was born with a silver spoon. My mouth. We just had a client in town this morning and we took her to lunch and we were talking about that. So I was born with a silver spoon in my mouth. My mom's a doctor and retired and all that. And same as my brother, but he's now a plastic surgeon. And, you know, Joni and I have done pretty well in real estate. And what made the my brother and I, even though we were born with some, is we saw our parents.
The work ethic. Them.
My parents are
work ethic.
Yeah, they are driven mm-hmm. people. Both of them to this day, even. And so, and it just instilled on me, my brother and I, that we're hard, hard working. And my brother, because the lady that came into town, she's a doctor, and we're like, she's like, oh, he's got to be, because he went to UCLA and USC and Baylor College, all these mm-hmm. prestigious programs. And she's like, he's got to be top of his class. He never was. I think I can speak for him. He's not the smartest one either in the room, but he's.
You outworked everybody, though. Outworked everybody. Just like Corey said, you can't outwork me.
But I think it's yeah. So I think yeah, that drive is mm-hmm. Is crucial.
Yeah, either have it or you don't.
I want to caution something too. Is if I can is you as a solo entrepreneur, you know, you can crush it. You might be able mm-hmm. to get up to a $500,000 business, maybe even $1 million if you're just you have no sleep. at some point you cannot get past this mark, mm-hmm. right? It's mm-hmm. it's like this roadblock that you can't right. get past no matter what. Mm-hmm. And the common denominator is because you don't build a team. You don't mm-hmm. delegate. You don't do it. It's all on your shoulders. Mm-hmm. I remember the first time I hired my personal assistant, it was life-changing.
But I'm sure it was hard at the time, right?
Oh my God, it was life-changing. And it was because you have to basically say, I know I can get it done. I'm hoping you can get it done, right? And if you can't, it's going to be a reflection on me. And so you have all this weird thing going yeah. on there. But what I'm saying too is that drive, all of that stuff that got you to this point, you have to then disperse it and think smarter, not harder.
Right.
When you get up to all the drive in the beginning, it's all massive mm-hmm. hard work. Mm-hmm. I really think that you cannot have smart work without hard work. Like it's massive hard work. It's an uphill. It's massive. But then you get to this point where you want to get past it, and it might be a dollar amount. It might be, you know, a certain amount of units or how, whatever. You've got to rethink to get to that next level, to get to that next plateau mm-hmm. or wherever you're wanting to go. You've got to rethink all this and almost forget that all that drive and all that stuff. Now you got to disperse it. Now you got to delegate. Mm-hmm. Now you got to trust. You got to build a team. You got to do videos of you doing stuff and watch. I mean, you got to do things in a different way. You're still driven, mm-hmm. but you're just driven in a different way. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. It makes sense. Yeah.
Let me ask you this. And I think it goes with what you're just saying. Cause you talked earlier about being an entrepreneur is about being a creator, right? Creating something and having that love for what you're creating. And say, so what, in your opinion, what's the steps? So you created something, right? And maybe you created it even with a team and all that. Once it's like flowing and going, do you, in your opinion, and I'm asking this, I think for personal reason, but if it's created and it's running and it's, do you just let it go or do you create, is it to the idea of an entrepreneur to, okay, now what's the next step for that business? Or do you create something else? Because I've gone both ways. And I know creating other things, Joni and I maxed ourselves mm-hmm. out, especially with COVID. We ended up creating other businesses, which I think it took our bandwidth too wide. And we probably regret some of that, but, so what, in your opinion, what do you recreate and make something that you already created bigger, and or do you just let it ride, or do you, what's your opinion?
I think it's really easy to go wider than deeper. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by that is it's easy to just get so like caught up in shiny object and mm-hmm. a bunch of this other thing. And I am guilty just as the next person of this. I'm a work in progress, but I've learned that whenever I think I have it all to kind of gather and things are going pretty good and all this and that, I'm usually going wider, not deeper. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by deeper in an organization. So if I had an organization, maybe similar to what I know about your guys' organization, mm-hmm. I would be thinking about my staff and my team and all of them like family and figuring out a way that they can get their dreams accomplished. They can get things accomplished that they want in their lives. Mm. Do they want to have rental properties? Do mm-hmm. they want to have a nicer home? Do they want to do something special for their mom and pay off their house? Mm-hmm. Do they want to do something special for their kids? Do they have a college things taken care of? If that's a part of their journey, you know, have they been on a vacation in a while? And if they have, did they still have to work or were they able just to enjoy themselves? To dig deeper into maybe an organization that what I know about you guys having, I think it would be interesting to go deeper in that mm-hmm. and building from within. One of the things I really like about within Collective Genius with Jason is that he's not a wholesaler. He's not a fix and flipper. Mm-hmm. He's not a rehabber. He's not any of those things. But what he does is he digs deep into the people in Collective Genius, the members of Collective Genius, and he lends to them. Mm-hmm. And by lending to them, he may get a piece of a GP. He may do this. And so he still gets appreciation. He still gets depreciation. He still gets a lot of the same kind of benefits of being a fix and flipper, of being a rehire, of being a buy and hold, all these different things. Mm-hmm. But he does it in a different way. So he might private lend, you know, that way. And I know it's pretty substantial what he's done in that regard. Or he might connect a few people together. And because of that connection, that can create something basically out of thin air that he might want to be a part of, maybe bringing in an insurance company. And now you've got all these folks in the group that need insurance, and there's something that can be, you know, created there. There's, so I think that going deeper in within your organization is what people don't do. They start thinking about, now I've made some money. Now it's going well. Now it's not.
Let's start something else. What's next?
Right. And David Phelps wrote a great book called What's Your Next? Mm-hmm. And it's an awesome book. If you haven't read it, I highly recommend you read it. Mm-hmm. But basically it is that, it's that question what entrepreneurs get to is whenever they get the how, they get all the things that what most people think is their idea of success. Mm-hmm. And then they're going, now what? You know, now what? Now that I built that, now what? But I think it's because we don't, what we think we have success, it's only a little piece of success. I think there's a bigger, I think we got a piece of the pie of success. There's a much bigger piece of the pie. And I think you get into that bigger piece of the pie whenever you go deeper into your organization and your team and start to see how can you kind of create more winners and more people that can have their lives changed and all these other things by being a part of your team. By being a part of your organization, right? So now it's more of a family idea of success than it is this idea of just, you know, business success. Right.
That's awesome.
I love that perspective. Thank you for that.
Yeah, that was insightful. Thank you. Yeah. And I'm just curious, what are you truly passionate about? Yeah.
I love the passion, Corey, in you. That's I'm drawn to you.
I'm passionate about brushing my teeth. You know, what am I passionate
about? What gets you up in the morning? What gets you fired up?
Yeah. What gets me fired up? Well, I'm so this bracelet on me right here says grateful.
Yeah.
I wear it every single day. And I post every single day a reason to be grateful. And when I say I post every single day, I literally post every single day. And I have done that ever since I was diagnosed with thyroid cancer back at the end of 2012. Mm-hmm. So today is day 2457. I posted every single day for 2457 days. And today I'm grateful for the smell of coffee brewing. When I get up early, I appreciate the quiet time to enjoy coffee. Nice. Something so minuscule and small as brew of coffee helps you tap into the deep appreciation that we all should have from just living in freaking America, for one thing.
Yeah.
But two, by just having our breath, having our fingers, having our the way to talk, having to be able to listen. And I think gratitude is the ultimate currency for the next generation. Mm-hmm. It has to be.
Yeah.
Because whenever you're grateful for things in your life, it's really difficult to knock you down to where, you know, you're so depressed that you put a gun in your mouth. You're so depressed that you overdose or something like that, that we all know stories of massively successful people have done.
Right.
But whenever you're grateful, then what you realize is that life is happening for me, not to me. Right. To me, I would be a victim. For me, I'm a victor. I'm learning through that process. And so what gets me up in the morning, man, is having another day on this earth that I can experience life. You know, it's funny. Leslie likes to, my wife, she likes to go to sleep, you know, 9:30, 10 o'clock. And it's so hard for me. It's not that I'm not like to sleep and read and all these other things. It's because I feel like I'm going to miss out on life. I know it sounds weird, but I feel like I'm going to miss out on, like, I'll sleep when I'm dead. I know that's a really bad, really, really bad thing to say, but, and I've gotten better. I'm like I'm a work in progress on this, but like, I'm passionate, Sean, about just having an opportunity every day to get up and experience life and make a phone call to my mother that's still alive. That's 77, going to be 78 in June. Every Sunday we spend time together. It's amazing. That didn't used to happen either. All that stuff happened when I went through thyroid cancer. I'm grateful that I'm a cancer victor, not a victim. Cause I know people that have, not made it through. I've had deep conversations with people about powerful things, Sean. And then 2 weeks later they passed away. And if you have something like that happen where you have this awareness that you have an expiration date on you. Right? Then you have this, I think, you know, they say when your mind expands, it can never go back to the same size. You're here thinking, but then you expand and you go, oh wow, there's a way bigger picture than what I'm exposed to. There's a lot more going on here than what I thought was going on. So in the shower every day, every morning, over and over and over again, I say my worst day is someone else's paradise. My worst day is someone else's paradise. I say it over and over and over and over and over again. As that water runs down my face, I say it over and over again. And what that does is it sets up a foundation for the day that is much harder. It's not impossible, because you know, you get some big ones, but it's not impossible, but it's harder to knock you down, you know, where you're just so depressed and down and all this and that. So I think what gets me up every day, Sean, is gratitude. What gets me up, what gets me going, what makes me excited about life is having an opportunity to experience it.
Yeah. I hope everybody, that's one of those things you rewind and you listen to again, because it's so simple, but so like deep and true. So
yeah. Some great takeaways there, Corey. I mean, for myself, I mean, I'm not as, you know, you do it every day, but it's something that I need to do more often is wake up. You know, I used to write in my journal, you know, what I'm grateful for every day. But if I keep consistent at it, and I think that's the takeaway here is that, you know, all of us needs to just get up and be grateful for something, right?
Absolutely. I challenge you both. Start doing it in the shower. Guess what? You got to take a shower every single day, don't you? So there's the consistency factor. Whether you like it or not, you're going to probably take a shower. So then that's the opportunity for you. Set up that process in the shower. And when that water's running over you, close your eyes and say it over and over and over and over again. It's been life changing, to be able to do something like that. And like you said, the consistency factor has a lot to do with some kind of routine that's always going to be there. For me, that was the shower.
Awesome.
I mean, we've taken a ton of your time already. We appreciate, you know, you joining us. I think we're going to have to do this again, because I didn't even get to half of your story, I don't think, but you added so much value to everybody. And, you know, we're very grateful for you. You know, we've always enjoyed time with you and spending time, and we're looking forward to hopefully sometime soon, maybe traveling, you know, doing a trip with you guys and your family, your wife, and so, but
and for sure seeing you at CG next.
Yeah, in June. You'll be there in June, or
yeah, for Collective Genius. Yeah.
Awesome.
All right.
So, how can everybody that maybe can you? Where can people get a hold of you, and if they want to reach out and learn more about your podcast, you know, would you mind sharing some of that info and where they can reach out to you?
I'd be happy to. Before I do, I want you to know that you guys, the first day I met you guys, I knew you were special.
Thank you.
Absolutely knew you were special.
Thank you.
I knew that, you know, you guys were just going to do some amazing things. And so kudos to you for just crushing it. I mean, just doing such a great job. So
thank you.
Thanks, Corey. And,
people are noticing. So
yeah, it means a lot. Yeah. Coming from you. So thank you. Yeah.
Yep.
So.
So if you want to know more about me, you can go to coryboatright.com. It's CoryBoatright. It has some cool videos of clients I work with. We do have some coaching for wholesaling. And I've done different things, but I really just say focus on the wholesaling for me has been the easiest low-hanging fruit. And so we've done pretty well on that. I do over 100 deals a year pretty consecutively. And I'm passionate about a lot of things, but particularly about marketing. And I think as a real estate investor, you're not really an investor. You're really a real estate marketer. Mm-hmm. So if that interests you, you can go to Cory's Coaching, C-O-R-Y-S, coaching.com. Pretty excited about getting that domain, if I wouldn't mind. Cory'sCoaching.com.
That is pretty cool.
And then you can check out our kind of our information business, if you will. It's at Real Estate Investing Profits. We recently got REI Profits, which I'm excited about as well. So REIProfits.com. So a couple different places. Social media, you type my name in. I'm usually going to pop up there. I really enjoy all things marketing. I really think that social media is one of the best ways that we can connect with people now and in the future until AI hits us. So wanting to be a part of that. So that's the way to do it.
Awesome. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Cory.
Thank you for having me.
You've been listening to Inside the Wolf's Den, an entrepreneurial journey with Sean and Joni Wolfswinkle. Tons of entrepreneurial podcasts are out there talking.
Talking.
But Joni and Sean are living it every single day. Their portfolio now includes many franchises and medium-sized businesses. We talk about the trials and motivators of successfully running a business. Join us again soon for another podcast. But until then, reach out on the website at InsideTheWolf'sDen.com, on Facebook at Inside the Wolf's Den, on Instagram at Inside the Wolf Den. We'll see you again soon. This is Inside the Wolf's Den. We'll see you next time.